Hello, everybody. My name is Dio Morales, your host of the Gold Squadron Podcast. We're coming to you live from episode 197. I'm joined by Marcel, Dean Abercrombie and Fitch Manzano.
Not so much. So I was wanting to fly the May butterscotch or whatever this weekend, but unfortunately stuff came up. But I heard it was a really good event, though. So maybe Buttercup can come out next time.
Maybe. Will Zangief Haywood.
Oh, going to give you the elbow drop. Little combo moves. Look out.
And Ryan, no mangoes for Jangos. Stan Azuski.
No Jangos. The people listened. Zam is free.
There you go. Well, today, on today's episode, before you guys even ask, are we going to talk about Defender Vader? Of course, we're going to talk about Defender Vader. Ryan's not too happy about it. We got some hot takes coming for you. But first, if you missed it, this last weekend we had the Sigma qualifier for Flight Club, and it was our first hyperspace event in the series and our first in a series of five hyperspace events. I'm hoping to go through the top 32 lists, just looking for the different variety, the different archetypes that we have, see what the data can tell us from what we thought would happen versus what did happen, and what, you know, what the data says about the possible evolution. Because as we know, when people look at metadata, they usually end up making some type of decisions for their list, even though the Omega qualifier is only, you know, not even 7 days away at this point. By the way, tickets for Omega Qualifier are available, GoldSquadronPodcast.com, sponsor for our episode today. Even though it's only, you know, 6-7 days away, there are people who will still look at the data and make some type of shifts in their list. And I want to kind of see what some of those might be. But let's just jump right into it. We're starting right here at the 32nd spot with Jacob Beck. All right, Galactic Republic, 3 Delta 7 Jedi Knights. As you guys know, in hyperspace, none of the named Aether Sprites are hyperspace legal. And then we got R2-D2 with Ayla Secura. Really good buy there. If you're not familiar with Ayla Secura, she focus and a coordinate every turn, and it doesn't take stress. It's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. We've been talking about from the beginning of Ayla being released that she is top tier. Absolutely fantastic. You just got to find a place for her. And I think in hyperspace, she really really shines. I think we got to see Jacob play twice on stream. I know for sure once, but absolutely fantastic list. And this is something that I want to play around with because I really like it. I really like it. I like the list. I like the variety there. And let's talk about Republic. Republic had the most number of appearances in the tournament. Let me go ahead and pull up these numbers here. So everybody likes their faction numbers. We had 45. You hear me? Top faction, 45 appearances of the Galactic Republic. Now, let's take a pause there. Gentlemen, thoughts on the fact that Republic was the most brought faction? Any thoughts there?
I think we've seen the success of the Jedi Knight 7Bs on Extended. So, assuming that would transfer over to hyperspace, and I think that they have some of the few aces in hyperspace as well on the Ada, the Actus class, with like Obi-Wan, Anakin, and even Ayla Secura.
All righty. Well, let's keep moving on here. We'll start with Marcel and roll down the line. First order, Robin Farden.
Robin Farden. First order list, 194 points, coming in with double aces, but can turn to triple aces at some point in the game, with Major Von Reg on TIE Interceptor, or TIE BA Interceptor with Daredevil. Kylo Ren on, with Extreme Maneuvers, which is the Force version of Daredevil. And then Rush, I believe, Megan, bringing in the rear. 194. Yeah, pretty solid. I think it's a bunch of three agility ships. I like the double, you know, the Daredevil and Extreme Maneuvers on it. I think we're gonna see a lot of Extreme Maneuvers, and Daredevil being 2 points is a bit by at that initiative six.
When it comes to First Order, if I look on my list here, First Order came in six, with our factions. We had 15 appearances of the First Order in our event. All right, 15. We'll continue here. Another faction here, and this is a this is going to start our trend here just a little bit. Will, break down Matthew Phillipson's list.
No problem. So, Matthew Phillipson brought Ceresteru in the M3A with the tractor beam. That's the rerolls for yourself and rerolls on defense for yourself and those at range one. And then two Cartel spacers with proton torpedoes, Cartel spacer with ion torpedoes, then two binary pirates, plus the I-1 Z-95s with false transponder codes, and the thread tracers. So the idea here is that Ceresteru can help these binary pirates hold on to their focuses until I-1. And then I-1, you shoot the tracers, get a lock, able to jam the ship, potentially two jams on that ship with the double false transponder codes. And then you just rock it with proton torpedoes and the ion torpedoes, and essentially try to delete a ship around there. Surprised that there's not the thread tracers on Ceresteru, but shooting the tractor beam in I-5 does make a lot more sense than putting it, or having an extra ship in there.
I mean, Will, one of the trends that we saw in the tournament is the popularity of what you deemed, you were the first person I heard say it, tracers and spacers, right? Or spacers and tracers. Mm-hmm. I think you said it the other way around. It's a fantastic combo, all right? You can get a lot of ships. Those two dice become a lot more consistent when you have target locks in that opening. And it's, most of these squads carry a tractor beam around, which is dangerous, all right? Which is dangerous there, making those two dice even more dangerous. But my question, or my issue that we had a couple of times watching on stream, and this is even spoilers, even our even with our champion, there are sometimes some interesting situations where the order in which you use these different combined arms can create some different advantages or disadvantages for you. I found it really interesting. But anyway, that's a conversation for... Go watch the videos when they're uploaded. You'll see some of those situations. Alrighty, let's roll here. We got Kenneth Lyon bringing a very similar list to what we saw, three Jedi Knights and Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Ada 2. Notice this trend, guys, three Jedi Knights and Obi-Wan, while not a support ship, but it's three pretty beefy ships and an ace, right? You got some different approaches that you can hit there, and brought to you by Kenneth Lyon. And there, Kenneth Lyon is in the chat, says, hey, that's me. Triple Jedi Knights plus something else is an archetype that we see quite a bit shine through here in the Sigma qualifier. All right, check this out, Ryan.
All right, we have Carlo with a Galactic Republic list, full 200 points used, starting out with R2-D2 in the Y-Wing, carrying Dorsal Turret, Wolf Pack, and Connor Nets. not too surprised to see Wolfpack being used on a cheaper platform than, say, an Arc or a Lat to provide those locks. But then we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Loyalist, Volunteer, Nimbus class V-Wings, all with the Alpha Besh title, or sorry, config, and all of them with thermal detonators. So we're seeing, my guess is they all go in, unless they have an advantageous lock that they know they're not going to be punished for. They're going to take a focus, and as needed, use Wolfpack to get the locks with Besh to make it a really, really accurate shot. And then I've kind of thought of it similar to how A-Wings work. When they pass, those thermal detonators are really dangerous. They have a lot of reach and range with that one straight and two straight drop potential, and there's a lot of charges for them. While they don't, while they're not another attack arc, they are another threat area behind the V-Wings. The Connor Nets as well is extremely dangerous at just 3 points for R2-D2 to use himself. Just that dorsal for a cheap additional arc coverage, but 40 points for that R2-D2 with dorsal Wolfpack Connor Nets is a solid investment, and then rounding it all out with a lot of V-Wings, it's a lot of ships to shoot down. It's just, that is a Ryan ship list count territory, six ships right there. it's interesting. It's we're going to see more of these V-Wings. I was surprised to see as many as I saw that were successful to this degree. I still have some reservations, but hey, you know, we're just getting into seeing these newer ships really sort of spread their wings a bit and really get a feel for how they're, and really get a feel for how these ships will work within the meta. So I am optimistic with reservations on the V-Wing's future. This looks like a solid list to start with, for sure.
I wonder if the V-Wing kind of gets the, takes the path very similar to the Torrent, where at first people are like, this is trash, until we found the combination of them that works best. And then that additional part of how to fly them, right? Because you have to, you got to find what works. And this combination of Besh plus thermal detonators might be the key that that we're looking for. We'll find out. Carlo,
yeah. I've already seen a lot. I've had a local of mine do a lot of Bash and thermal debts before, but it was normally with Warthog, which took up a lot of points and only allowed four more V-Wings left instead of this five here plus that sixth ship. I think Wolfpack is very interesting because it allows those V-Wings to potentially spend that focus defensively when they need to, but then come back and say, hey, I was just defending, I'll take a strain to take a lock, and now my offense with Besh is arguably much better than just having a focus. Mm-hmm. So either you leave those V-Wings with a focus lock shot, or they could spend their focus defensively with three agility and use Wolfpack to get a lock.
Yeah, I am... I'm optimistic that we might see some more V-Wings in the future, especially with the amount of hyperspace experimentation we have coming up here. Joel Springle bringing pretty much a classic, five T-65 X-Wings. You got five ships with firepower and made it into the top 32. And now this is an archetype that we're going to see quite a bit of going forward, and we're gonna get to talk about this a little bit here. Marcel, what do we got?
All right, we got first. They said they couldn't hear me. Did you raise my volume?
You're good. You're good now. Microphone's okay. Placement's perfect.
Yeah. So we've got Adam Smith with Inquisitors, the Inquisitors with the Force, Galactic Empire Inquisitors, bringing five of them. In this particular case, it's four of them with Foresight and a fifth with Threat Tracers coming in at 198 points. Five Inquisitors and a potential of nine shots per turn. Very solid.
So one of the things that we saw, Marcel, right, is this five Inquisitors is something that pops up a couple of times. Spoilers, it ends up in the top table. Let's talk about Foresight. Let's talk about the strength of Foresight. Why is Foresight so good?
Well, a couple reasons. One, it stretches out. So for the people who aren't familiar with it, Foresight, it's a secondary weapon that is bullseye only from range 1 to 3. And it reads that during the activation phase, if somebody moves and ends in your bullseye, that you can perform that attack against that ship. You spend the force to perform that attack. It is has the missile symbol below it, which means it ignores range. So if you're shooting at range 3, it's you're getting rid of that range bonus. And it also has a natural ability, which says soft focus. If you roll a focus, you may turn one focus into a hit. So you spend your force, and you can, you know, if you roll hit focus, it turns into 2 hits. And then additionally, you can use this same weapon during your actual activation. Inquisitors only have 2 die attacks. So this is a way, if they're in your bullseye, to get that 2 die attack and get a natural, a natural mod, turning that focus into a hit. Plus, if they're at range 3, they're getting rid of that range bonus. So it just comes in and gives you a ton of value, because free mods are essentially free actions. I mean, how much do we spend and how much do we value giving a calculate to someone? This is potentially giving 2 calculates to a ship in that one turn.
Very true. Now, here's a question. You know, there's an argument baking out of the chat, and I love it. I love seeing the different sides that people look at this, because there are people who look at points in the sense of the entire game, and then there's people like, but I like that. I don't want it to go. I like to fly this. I don't want the points to go up. So here's a question for all of you: Is this? Let me spoilers again. At the final table, we got 5 Foresight Inquisitors. All of them have Foresight. Now, even if, you know, the Inquisitors went up a couple points, right, each, or let's say they go up 1 point each, so then you could not fit 5 with Foresight. You could still fit 3 with Foresight and maybe 2 of them with Tracers, right? You get some type of variation in that. But obviously we see that this version still has 2 points to play with, and didn't need 5 Foresight Inquisitors in order to get into the top 32. I just find it interesting. I think this is a proof of concept for possibly the next variation of it, if the 5 with Foresight don't end up being legal in the future if the points go up.
Yeah, I think the Foresight itself is good at 4 points, because there's not a whole lot of other ships that are taking it, and it is a really good ability. You could throw it on someone like Luke, who doesn't really get punished for spending that force, because he'll get it back when he defends anyway. So there's ships that want it. I think the Inquisitor itself, or that, I think the entire chassis itself is probably undercosted, and I'm saying the entire chassis all the way up through the named ones as well. Where they can all benefit to go up a point or two, and they'll be fine. And will it still be a good list? Yeah. Will a bunch of 3 Foresights and 2 Tracers still be a solid enough list? Yeah. It won't be as solid as 5. It's easier to dodge 3 bullseyes than it is to dodge 5 bullseyes. But I don't think the Foresight itself should go up, and I think the list itself is good and strong, but it's not oppressive to the point where it's not Nantex level, where you gotta, like, you know, the sky ain't falling. It's fine. Bring it up a point or two, and bring up these and the regular Inquisitors and the named ones a point or two, and you'll be fine.
Well, let's continue a little bit of debate. Now, Will, I know you've been flying some V1s lately. Now, I know you've been hanging on to those the Barons more than the Inquisitors. But here's a question. Okay. I want to talk about Foresight specifically, because so many people are afraid of Foresight Inquisitors, and they are really good in mass. My question is, why are you jousting Foresight Inquisitors? Because I feel like if the games where we saw Foresight Inquisitors really eat up a squad with Foresight specifically. Now, it's good. It's getting good in and of itself, but the squads where we're seeing Foresight like destroy a squad where you got like you're literally killing ships in activation phase happened when you had lists just like going towards each other. Is there an archetype or a different play style that you can play to avoid some of the consistent shots that Foresight gives you?
I mean, don't joust them, I guess. I don't, it really depends on like your list at that point, because if you're moving first, you just need to keep an eye out for those bullseyes. But if you're moving after them, that's a lot more of a troubling situation. Hopefully, though, if you are moving after them, you don't have to deploy immediately across from them. Or you do the funny thing of you deploy across from them, but you try to set yourself up so they can't bullseye you, even if they barrel roll. But I think that's... You're saying that as like a strength, but I think it's actually a weakness of the Foresight Inquisitors that they have to keep their... themselves, that bullseye arc, facing towards the enemy, and it can get them into a lot of trouble.
All right, fair. Okay, let's continue down our list here. Zachary Forrest bringing, what is that, 5 gray squadron bombers with ion turrets and thermal detonators, couple of them with some torpedoes. What do we got in there? We got proton torpedoes, advanced proton, and ion torpedoes all at 199. Now, gentlemen, one thing I got to point out here, this is now the fifth or sixth list that we've gone through where we got multiples of the same ship. Multiples of the same ship. Now, the question I want to bring up is, obviously, the list did well, right? They did well together. Are these lists that have multiple of the same ship, are they losing some potential by not bringing mixed arms? Or are the weapons they're bringing to the table good enough? Are they maxing out the potential? Are they losing something? What do you think, Ryan?
Well, so when you have a chassis like the Y-Wing that has a lot of upgrade slots, you almost kind of have combined arms through upgrades, but at the same time, you're not changing the chassis, which means your dial, there's no variation there in some of your maneuver potential, whether it's barrels being white instead of red. So you compare it to an X-Wing, your X-Wing has boost. I'm kind of in favor of combined arms instead of, you know, hitting duplicate a lot and seeing what upgrades do later. I tend to be, you know, what does the space chassis give me more than what do the upgrades? But like I said, the nice thing with the Y-Wing is you can kit it out in certain variations to do what you want it to do. And for some people, it's a benefit to them. It's easier to look at the same dial the entire day and know that it's going to be the same for every ship. They don't have to mix things up. They know what it's going to do across the entire day because it's every single one of their ships. On the flip side, you can mix up the dials potentially, but in TTS, it's a little bit harder to do because you got the color coding, but it's there. So it's pluses and minuses across the board. I could see benefits on either side. I could see negatives on either side. I think it is worth trying combined arms because it can potentially mess with target priority a bit more, or at least give you a variety of, like, I'm not always counting on this ship to be a two die out of the front and ion cannon turret, 3 die out of the side. But if I brought an X-Wing or a B-Wing, I could have a ship that has that 4 dice range one big whammy that doesn't need a lock like these Y-Wings have with torpedoes. So it's kind of a do what you want to do territory. And if same ships work for you, cool. I think trying combined arms has its benefits more so than its disadvantages. But on the other side of target priority, if someone looks at this list and they're like, which one do I kill first? It's just going to be the most expensive one, most likely. Is that the correct choice? I probably want to take the proton torpedo off the board, but there's an ion torpedo that's cheaper with thermal detonators that might be dangerous in the long term because it has thermal detonators. Like, it depends. Mm-hmm. So sometimes having the same of every ship could even make it more difficult for Tiger Party because you have to figure out which one it is.
Right. Now, I want to go ahead and answer the question out loud because somebody did ask it in the chat. What do we mean by combined arms, Ryan?
So by combined arms, we're talking about a list in total combines their arms together to create your combined arms result. And there's not really numerical cost to it. It's just instead of saying, I'm going to put my lot in with this chassis the entire way through, or this upgrade even. Some people just like toss, like they'll make an entire list, all the exact same ship, all the upgrades across the board. Easy, it might work, cool. But instead, if you vary things up, you could end up creating a better sum of the parts together, even though if the parts are different than just hitting duplicate over and over. And there's likely diminishing returns doing the same thing over and over versus something that might have a higher return on investment if you vary it up and find that chemistry together of combined arms.
Perfect. All right. Then we get Tara Devlin bringing, again, here we go, more Jedi Knights. But now these have CLT and was able to fit in a V-Wing with Connor Nets. One of the Jedi Knights is also a 7B. I love this. We just finished talking about combined arms. Here we go. Even though you have, you know, four Jedi Knights, one of them is a 7B. Three of them have CLT. And then we got this little bit of sneaky tech with the V-Wing in here. I love this. I love this. I wish we could have gotten to see this one on stream just because it looks funky, and I'm curious to know how it would have flown, but obviously it did well enough to get into the top 32, so congratulations there to Tara. All right, Marcel, we got Steve Cutillo.
Steve Cutillo. So he's flying a what do we want to call this? A variance of a variance heavy list. He's flying six. Is it six? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, uh-huh. Six TIE interceptors. Four of them being the Initiative One TIE interceptor flying naked, and two of them being the Saber Squadron Initiative Four, I believe. The Saber Squadrons are. With Predator coming in at 198 points. So again, he's got four of them at initiative. One just zooming in, blocking up, throwing. I think we learned with the scum, with the M3As, that having three defense dice and three red dice, not just three attack dice, but any three, whether it's tractor or threat tracer or whatever it is, three attack dice and three defense dice is good, period. I'm surprised that this one came out, and I'm surprised we haven't seen more versions of this again. They lack on the shields. They don't have the shields, so they're a little bit more susceptible to die and get one shot. It's that one shield does make a huge difference, but yeah, I mean, that shield makes a huge difference, but so does that extra attack die. And you have two of them that have the potential to do sort of a little office strike with the Predator and Focus, and then being able to double reposition and still get an offensive modifier. So I like this list a lot. It seems fun to play with. And again, six ships with three agility, three attack is always going to have a pretty high floor.
Yep. I mean, people have been asking about interceptors for a while, like what's the right way to fly some of these generic interceptors, and who knows, give this a shot if you have not. Give this a shot. Like, I'm curious to fly something like that because you have the bodies to make some mistakes in there, right? You got a lot of options, a lot of movement options. Very interesting. All right, now Taborn Ostbo, aka Toby Z, brings five Inquisitors with Foresight. This is not going to be the only version of it we see. It's very good. Each of them are 40 points, and like we talked about it before, all the tools that Foresight has. And here we go. Will the next, the other Ty V1 type of list. What do we got here?
All right. Now we're talking. This is, I can't see whose list it is. Give me that name. Who's after?
Chris
who's
Rosile. After Toby?
Chris, thank you. All right, Chris Brock. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Ty Advanced V1s, Barons of the Empire. Two of them with Thread Tracers, and the remaining four have Fire Control System and Proton Rockets. Now, that ends up being a full 200-point squad, and this is just the ultimate chef's kiss, in my opinion. Really mixing what Marcel had been flying with the Thread Tracers and Proton Rockets, but upping the, what I want to say, consistency of those, or excuse me, let me rephrase that. Upping the utility of Thread Tracers to not only be able to get the initial lock, but with Fire Control System, if you're not shooting the Proton Rocket, you actually save your lock until you hone that in. I think it's very smart, and I would love to actually put this onto the table. I don't know. I'm clutching my Wampa like it's pearls around my neck, though.
That's your little bit of special seasoning. That's all, Will, right?
Yeah, that's true.
All right, then we get to Tim Bordeaux. We see a little bit different Imperial flavor here than what we've seen. Yeah, we got Barons of the Empire, two of them with Thread Tracers. But using those Thread Tracers to set up two TIE Defenders with Fire Control System. We know the Defenders are good. They're the Deltas. They're Initiative 1. Really tanky, focus evade, every turn, essentially. As long as you're not getting blocked and you're doing those three or faster maneuvers. This is also a very different. This is a squad that we would not see in extended, right? I don't believe that we would see it in extended, but it is something that I would be really curious to put it on the table. Ryan, how do you think these Barons and the Delta work together? Because I'm looking at the flight style of both of these ships, and they seem to move a little bit differently.
Well, I mean, the Thread Tracers do have just that range, you know, 1 to 3 claws. So you don't need to fly close. And the Barons sort of being I-3, Deltas I-1, you know, Deltas ideally getting the maneuver they need to do, and then allowing the Barons to either follow up behind or flank more to the side. They both have reposition capability, so they don't need to be that tight to each other. So they don't need to follow that close in the first place. And I think, oddly enough, I think Fire Control would be, you get more points for your Fire Control if they were actually on the Barons. You're more likely to need to spend the target lock on the Defender shots than on the Barons. So you may as well move FCS, in my own opinion. FCS probably would have done more on the Barons than on the Defenders. Just the sheer fact that, sure, you can, the Thread Tracers can set up the Defenders for their locks for their attack, but they're just more likely to spend their target locks on offense completely than just rerolling one dice. You're more incentivized to just go for the one reroll, whereas if you just say, I could potentially use all my green tokens defensively and be really, really hard to kill, and then have those tracers set me up to have my locks for offensive firepower if needed for my only offensive mod. Barons, shooting only two dice, are more likely only going to need a single reroll than two.
All right. Very cool. Very cool list. I like that a lot. Cody Wood flying another version of triple silencers. We know that silencers are good. They fast. They go zoomy zoomy, and that's one of Ryan's Michigan crew over there. Right there, you go. What part of Michigan? Right there. Now, James Ritter here brings what I thought, we did get to see this on stream, what I thought was one of the more interesting Republic lists out there. Marcel, take a look at this.
Okay, so we've got a Galactic Republic at a 197 with two Naboo Starfighters and two at a to act as ETAs, however you prefer to say it. We've got Anakin and the new Starfighter with an advanced proton torpedo, and Rick Olay with Daredevil. And then both Obi-Wan Kenobi and Isla Secura and Predator. I don't remember what Isla's ability is.
That's the, if she's range one looking at a enemy, anybody the enemy shoots can convert a blank to an eyeball.
Okay.
Or I-5, if you want to look at it like that, too.
Another I-5, yeah. So you get three I-5s on Anakin, and she gets to be... Okay, so she's the defensive one that basically she's trying to get in their clothes and then get additional defensive mods for the people getting shot. Yeah, super interesting. I'm obviously a fan of Anakin and Rick. I am a fan of Obi. So why wouldn't I be a fan of Ayala? But yeah, this just seems like really with no regen on it. This seems like a really brave move because those Actus can really disappear in a hurry, and so can Rick and Anakin. I'm just gonna. I don't know how I feel about it. I love it personally. Love it. I don't know how many other people can replicate this and
replicate the success he had. He did really well. He played.
Yeah, the success is what I'm referring to. So yeah, I wouldn't really trust myself to not crash and burn and go like 2-4, 3-3 with it. Yeah. So I'll maybe it is a really good list, but at the moment I'm chalking it up to really good piloting.
Well, I would like to let you know that was a 6-0 list. 6-0 list that this right here. So, you know, whether it was, you know, James may have uncovered something, maybe showing us another path that exists here for the Republic. If you don't want to fly three Jedi Knights, you can get a little variety, a little bit of mixed arms right there. We continue here. Kevin Rossner bringing a Separatist list, and this is a triple three. This is the definition of combined arms. Three different chassis right here. What do we got, Will?
All right. Well, this starts off with General Grievous in the Boba Lab with Daredevil, Imperium Plating, and Solus One. Sam Wessel with Count Dooku thermal detonators, false transponder codes, and hull upgrade, and then Sun Fock with Predator. So we've seen this is actually there's another archetype like this as well that we saw Grievous Zam plus one. Used to be Tri-Fighters getting slotted in there, but people started to realize that for that sub 50 point cost, you can easily just put in a Nantex to get a three agility ship that can still hit hard just like these other ships. I do think it's interesting. I have just written off Grievous as a good ship, and I've been proven wrong by many Separatists in this tournament. I do think Zam's carrying this squad, though. With Count Dooku and the thermal detonators, very much being able to support Sun Fak. You can do things like call out evades for Sun Fak if he needs that one evade to survive. So I think it's very interesting. We caught, it wasn't Kevin on stream, but we caught a similar archetype on stream. And it was Zam pretty much carrying the team.
Yep, pretty much there. Kevin Rossner, another one of our 6-0s there. Then we had Andrew Goldbach bringing a really, what I think is a really interesting scum squad here. We got Fenrau, Old Tarak, and then Moralo Evol. All right. Morallo Evol with Zam and Boba Fett. Yes, does Zam, is Zam the enabler of Morallo? Yes. Arm Fish says, outmaneuver Morallo. I want it back. I know. Oh, my goodness. Andrew Goldbach, by the way, shout out to him. He's the reason why we have outmaneuver YV666 quick tips. Love you, buddy. With Boba Fett crew there. This is a great squad. I look at it and it's something that's like, how do these even work together? But I could see the utility of how fast those fangs like to fight. And you bring in Morallo, you jump off the board, and then you come back on the other side for a surprise. I like it. I like it quite a bit.
I wonder how many people remember what Boba Fett crew even does.
Slowly opens up a tab to read Boba Fett.
Is that the crew or the gunner?
The crew. This is old school scum Boba Fett crew. Setup, start in reserve. At the end of setup, place yourself at range 0 of an obstacle and beyond range 3 of any enemy ship.
Yeah, nice. Quick way to get behind people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Start at a rock and come in for round 1 and then fly off their own base. And now you've got them cornered in.
Yeah. Yeah, I could definitely see them setting up to where, all right, you have two choices. Turn your whole squad to Morallo, who could just fly off the board, or you can go joust my fangs and have Morallo just following behind you. Neither one's a great option.
I mean, realistically, not pointing at Morallo might actually be the right call, because when you point at Morallo, Zam turns on. Mm-hmm. If you don't point at Morallo, Zam isn't active at all as a crew.
That's a big chunky ship, though. It's hard to not point at it.
Yeah, it's not exactly fun to try and chase down or joust old Tarok or Fenn either. Old Tarok's going to take your tokens away, and Fenn's going to be really angry at you.
That's right. So watch out. I know there's a lot of people who've been keeping an eye on trying to see when Morallo could fight back here and make its way into the meta. And Andrew Goldbach may have found the winning combo there. Watch out. I believe Andrew got into our top 16. Top 16 with that really awesome list. All right. Lee Holland brings another scum variant here, Fenrau, Old Tarok, and uses those extra points to get 3 Mining Guild Surveyors with Marge Sable Closure. I mean, that makes sense with them. They like flying through rocks and being able to give out strain. That's pretty sweet. Now we got another variation from Christopher Spenner for the Republic. What do we got here, Ryan?
So another Republic 4-ship list, a little bit of a the 4-ship salad seems to be the Republic's go-to right now. Just mix it up and see what you get. The mix-up here is we start with Obi-Wan in the Ada 2 with Patience, Predator, and R4 Astromech. We don't commonly see that Astromech on there just because there's not much of a need to gain those extra blues, but hey, got the extra points. Rick with Daredevil in R2, so that regenning Rick, who's always annoying to try and finish off, banking those points and running away. And then we have 2 Arc 170s, both 104th battalions, one of them with Wolfpack, carrying that extra value for those after defend locks. Just need the attacker in Arc, take a strain, grab a lock. 195 points. It does have a 5-point bid. So 2 of the points spent on R4, kind of questionable, I guess, in my mind on Obi. Could have, I'm not sure where else the points could go specifically, but worked out well for Christopher. Maybe some tweaking here and there. Maybe he likes doing 4Ks with Obi. He's often maybe sees himself doing the intuitive maneuvers to launch the 4K and really get behind opposing lists with that, activating that Predator. Because a lot of times you'll see those bullseyes are much easier to line up when stuff is trying to turn around or you're doing the turning around on them. Stuff's just going to be in front of you and likely getting that bullseye.
All right, we got some more Defender. I was reading the chat. We got some more Republic love here. Another variation. We got 2 Delta 7 7B Jedi Knights. Obviously, that's great. Anakin and the Naboo, but filling that other slot with Shaak-Ti, with Predator. Shaak-Ti able to hold on to those focus tokens, also being able, or green tokens in general, or letting one of her friends do it there. So pretty solid. Josh Dunn getting into the top 16. Sven Punga, another variation on these five Inquisitors V1s. Obviously, all these different flavors are able to do different things, but this one has one of them with Prockets, one of them naked, and three of them with Foresight, sitting at 197. It seems like some of these variations are also people just trying to fight for the bid, trying to get underneath the normal, quote-unquote, version with the five Foresight Inquisitors.
I'm interested. So let me ask you guys. Foresight Inquisitors versus Foresight Inquisitors. Do you want to move first to set up the Foresights in blocks? Or do you want to move after them?
I want to move first because you get more damage out of the Foresight shot than you do out of your regular ability. Because if you move first and evade, you're setting up additional shots that they're not going to get. And then even if they outposition you and they barrel roll or boost and, you know, get the better shot on you, they're going to be doing that while you're, you know, force evaded or something like that, you know, when you're tanked up a little bit. So
I would say there's an argument for going second, especially with Sven's list here. If Prockets, that's something you generally want to go after for. The other part of Foresight is it's also a deterrent for ships that move in front of you. Like Will said, this isn't like Snapshot. You have an entire arc. This is just Bullseye. So when Bullseye is trying to line up against other Bullseye, when they're flying into each other, there is a chance that if you move first, there's also the opponent's own Foresights as deterrents when you're moving in to set up your Foresights. So it can go both ways. It's difficult. It depends on your list comp. If I was Sven with the Prockets, I mean that Procket could be a game-changing turn if you hit that right. With if it was just straight five Inquisitor Foresights or five Inquisitor Foresights and you do the initiative roll, Will, what do you think from there? Like if they're both just in Foresight.
Yeah, if they're pure Foresights, I think that I would take it just for blocks. At that point, it wouldn't matter about Foresights. I would rather just block them to take away at least one of their mods.
All right, let's keep the good times rolling. Andreas Tolman bringing a very similar version here of triple silencers, Kylo with extreme maneuvers, Von Reg with Daredevil, and Rush with that automated target priority. Colin Richard, five X-Wings. Again, just solid chassis. Now here, Marcel, I have a question for you. If you were flying five X-Wings, I know that you like to usually set up pretty pretty wide. You kind of like to set up your board edge. How would you set up most of the time for with five X-Wings? What would you do?
I would set them up in a block. I'm not necessarily in a formation, but in a block. Like when I was flying the six Inquisitors, I actually had them in formation. I didn't keep them in formation long, but I started them out in formation. So I think once I get to for like five or six ships, I'm not. I'm looking at, especially if they're the same initiative and the same everything else, I'm probably starting off more in a traditional formation and kind of picking a spot where I typically start spread out is when I have ships that can all individually be their own little ship. They don't need the support of one another. They can just kind of like be independent and kind of take opportunity shots. But to me, this list doesn't do well with opportunity shots. You've got to get three or four shots onto the same ship in order for it to push damage to do the same thing with the multiple Inquisitors or things like that. So, I'd keep it in a block.
Very, very cool. Thank you. Jonathan Lohman making it into the top 16 as well. This is the top of the top 16 with Recoil, with Predator, Rush, and Kylo Ren with Hate. Then Jonathan tags me and says, look at how bad Recoil is. And I laugh. and then we get to Raymond Evans' list. Check this out, Will. Look at this interesting combination this guy brought.
So this is another one of the Zam Grievous Plus, except for this one's plus, because he brought three Trade Federation drones in addition to the General Grievous with Imperium and Solus One, and just Count Dooku on Zam. I think this is just mixed arms to a T. You have three cheap frontline units, you have a tanky brawler, and you have a fast ace for the flanking. And I could see you, if you utilize those Trade Federation drones as blockers to keep people's arcs off of Grievous and pretty much let Zam do whatever they need to do, I feel like this could, this might be the best Zam Grievous Plus.
Yeah, I really like it. You know, seeing the three Trade Federation drones in there definitely gives some different flavor there. Now, Ryan, you've flown a lot of Separatists. What are your two cents on this one?
Well, as I said before, I am thoroughly happy people started to explore this avenue further. I think many combinations work, and the most thing you're going to see is it's going to be Zam, Grievous, third thing. Whether third thing be named Nantex, a HMP, or maybe a Hyena. There's the three ace, or just the three ship style, right? Or you're going to see Zam plus featured thing, whether it's Grievous, an HMP, or, like I said, a Hyena, and then three Trade Federation drones. So it's going to be Zam plus four or Zam Grievous plus one. I think it's going to be your most common type of setup. This, what is interesting to see, is what I've wanted to try for a while. How well can Zam do with just Dooku crew? Baseline, no bombs, no illicit, no hull upgrade, no nothing. Just Count Dooku crew. See, as we see here, can perform well. So strip back all those extra things you've been putting on Zam, still effective as a light Zam, just with Dooku.
All right, let's get the good times rolling. Curtis Bidovich bringing Major Vermeil with Emperor Palpatine and four Saber Squadron Ace Interceptors. You know what? If there's a support ship that can keep up with those interceptors, it would be a TIE Reaper. Palpatine. I mean, obviously he did well, right? Like he got all the way. Where are we at right now? We're in the top eight. We're in the top eight. Man, but I mean, Palp must do some work in this list, right? Like it's a single force. But I mean, Ryan, this seems kind of up your alley, right? It's four to five ships that work together. What's going on here?
Well, a big thing to note is every ship in here is I-4. That is five ships at I-4, all with three dice attacks that all move increasingly fast. They can start in a block in a corner if they don't really feel like that, like something is deploying after them, and spread after and attack in different vectors. They can start spread and close in later with their reposition maneuvers. And Palpatine's just another way to say, I have a potential chance to save a modification for one of my, say if I roll If there's two attack dice incoming to one of my interceptors and I roll one of eight, but I got an eyeball, I could spend Palpatine instead of spending the focus that I could be using for offense. And with everyone also shooting an I-4, that means everyone can shoot an I-4 before Vermeil, for Vermeil to hit the kill shot, likely getting all those interceptors to strip any tokens that that enemy has, and Vermeil will come in with the big haymaker with his ability.
I like this a lot. Some people are saying that Julian Hood brought the same event to the Swedish event that was happening the same weekend. But yeah, this seems really solid and a hyperspace style list that we had not really seen much of and is making an appearance. Watch out for this one. Watch out. I think we're going to see some people experimenting with that one. Andrew Oler bringing a Republic list. What do we got here, Marcel?
We got a mute button. Andrew flying the Galactic Republic with a Warthog lat with tracers. That way he can keep... I don't know if he's keeping his gun to the forward and then doing that to the back. Kind of redundant a little bit, potentially. But anyway, he's flying tracers with two Jedi Knights that are Delta 7. And then in order to get the points down, he's got an Arc 170 rounding it out. And I think that Arc 170, is that the Initiative 3-1?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. So he's got the entire list flying at Initiative 3. And Threat Tracers is a good way to not have to worry about your rerolls, and it still gets that 3-die gun out of the front from Warthog when, you know, to try to strip some tokens or try to make his ability go a little bit further. And, of course... As always, if you try to alpha strike one of these things, Warthog is going to keep that thing on the board until they get to shoot. So that's always a plus. So, yeah, not a lot to say. It's just really efficient, really, really tanky. What is that? 10, 19 plus an additional 12. That's a 31 hull list here. That's putting out some damage.
Yeah, I like this version a lot more than what we had talked about previously, which was Hound in the Lant and then three Jedi Knights.
Mm-hmm.
To bump up to Warthog, you had to trade down a Jedi Knight for an Arc. But what do you really lose, though, with that? If you're getting rerolls anyways, and it's still a three-dice gun, I like it quite a bit.
One of the other interesting things that just comes to mind is a lot of people were taking Warthog in the beginning and trying to fit five ships with it, right? Four to five ships, trying to fit a bunch of generics, trying to get as much value out of that zombieism as possible. And here, spending a little bit more points on the higher initiative generics seems to have given Andrew a little bit of an edge. Obviously, made the top eight, five wins in Swiss. Strong list. I think this is the kind of stuff that, you know, that is played in hyperspace that you just don't see in extended, at least not yet. And our hope is, I know one of the things people have been asking, like, why hyperspace for these last few events is, well, it gives a completely different meta, it's the first thing, but I think the exercise of looking at different lists and having to break down a different meta will likely continue to also evolve what the extended meta looks like. I think Extended can learn something from hyperspace and, you know, and take the lessons that we have learned in Extended and apply them here to hyperspace as well.
I will add, when Will mentioned that he liked the Arc 170 edition, I think it adds another, because what we're used to seeing is the three Knights and Hound that only provides one medium based ship and theoretical disruption of space, a blocker. When you have the Arc, you have another combined area of medium-based blocks that you could block around for positioning and obviously deliver literal blocks, while the Knights can really start hammering on the edge at either separate edges or together on a flank and really sort of define your list and how they could start feasting upon areas that are only available to them because you know where your own ships are going and your medium bases are blocking the planes.
All right, more Republic goodness here. Doug Howe, again, double ARC 170s, those 104th Battalion pilots. Anakin in the Naboo Starfighter seems to be the Anakin of choice in hyperspace. And then we have Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Ada 2. Now, Ryan, you're pointing up, up, up. You think Anakin ends up going up in points here?
No, I mean, a point up, it's more like a Daniel Bryan, yes, yes. I'm a WWE.
Okay, got it, so, Daniel.
yeah, no, I'm really high on little Annie. Whether he deserves to go up in points, I don't know. But he is a strong piece if we've seen in a lot of these Fourship Republic lists. Definitely buy, buy, buy. Whether it's up, up, up in points, I don't know.
I mean, he seems really fair. Go ahead.
Well, I think people really have caught on to that. Baby Annie ends up in range one a lot more than Obi-Wan ever does. With doing those faster maneuvers, he ends up range one to use Obi-Wan's ability. And I think we finally wrapped our heads around that Obi-Wan can work with any Anakin, and loading it up on this baby Anakin Naboo has seemed to be more resilient than, say, the Ada version of Anakin.
Very cool. Very cool. Oh, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Annie. And one thing that we did see on stream that a lot of people didn't, I honestly had not thought of it until we saw it happen on stream. Remember, Obi-Wan Kenobi's ability does work with the Naboo Anakin as well. We talked about it when we first previewed it, but we hadn't seen anybody actually do it. And we did get to see some of that focus passing shenanigans for baby Anakin, which set up a couple of proton torpedo opportunities when Anakin ends up using passive sensors and then being able to have that focus from Obi-Wan. Very, very strong. Very strong. Then we get to friend of the show, Daniel Leon. My man, go ahead and read this one down. Who's next? I don't remember. I'm sorry. I think it's Will. Will, what do we got?
I will take it here. We have DGS 047. That is the unique I-1 HMP gunship with concussion missiles and Dark One probe droids. Also the repulsor stabilizers with him. Is two Geonosian prototypes with synced laser cannons in the stabilizers, and then General Grievous with Deadeye Shot, Kraken, and Solus One. So able to allow Kraken to keep some calculates on these HMPs. That synced laser cannon, if you retain a calculate after you shoot, it actually denies a range bonus as well. So you want to stack up as many calculates on these as you can. Between the free locks from, or free, the head of combat locks from probe droids, this list just has so many modifiers. And I still think people, when playing against these HMPs, really have a hard time tracking where these stabilizers are going to take them. Those side slips moved around the board, keeping their 180 degree arc pointed towards the middle of the board can be very difficult to fight. And Daniel here taking these above and beyond my expectations and bucking the normal trend of just taking the four HMPs. And I think being able to identify the problem that when you have just four HMPs, one of them is very much bloated because of the relay. So putting that bloated extra points of the relay onto a far more defensible ship in General Grievous, I think it was the winning call there.
I loved it. I loved it. And a couple of times what we saw Daniel do is with Kraken, remember, Kraken also gives Grievous the calculate action. So in order to continue keeping Grievous defensive, Grievous would take a calculate action and use Kraken to hold on to it and enter combat with focus, calculate, and potentially those rerolls on defense as well. So, you know, really good tech. I love the list building prowess that's here. And honestly, HMP, we're almost at the top of the top 32. We're almost at the end of this list here. And these are the only HMPs that we've talked about in this top 32. So, shout out to Daniel bringing this ship that either people are undervaluing or Daniel has some of that secret sauce and understands where to put these ships and taking to his advantage, getting those 5 wins in Swiss and making it all the way up to the top 4.
I'd be curious to hear why he went with Concussion Missile and not Diamond Boron, because it's essentially the same shot, just a point cheaper, and potentially can net you more damage. While Concussion can flip cards, Diamond Boron can do an additional damage to not only the ship you've attacked, but every ship range one around the defender, and has the same amount of charges. So I still see Diamond Boron as a better value than Concussion, and then it frees up another point. You could swap Deadeye Shot for Daredevil and still keep the bid point. We've seen Daredevil work on Grievous, right?
I will say, I'm sure Daniel's probably coming up with his response because he's in the chat right now. We did see Concussion Missile, if I remember correctly, we saw Concussion Missile trigger a direct hit onto an enemy ship. It was absolutely hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And kept him in the game. He ended up losing the one that we had on stream. But still, like, I don't know why not Diamond Boron. But, I mean, there's some little extra shenanigans possible with the Concussion Missile.
Yeah, like...
Daniel, if you got a response, let's get it. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, because there's a higher chance... there's potentially more damage that could be done to a singular target than the Diamond Borons. But the Diamond Borons also do have the flip side that they can hurt your own ships too, more likely than Concussion Missiles, since they just do a damage instead of the flip card Concussion.
Cool. Yep, and that's what he says in the chat. He says self splash is bad. I mean, there you go. If you don't even want to risk that, then that makes sense. We can continue here. Don Copens, we're in the top 4 now, bringing another triple chassis separatist list. We got Zam, Grievous, and Brewer Kret. That is the Initiative 5, one of the Initiative 5 Nantex classes. Brewer has Treacherous and Predator. General Grievous has Treacherous, Impervium Plating, and Soulless One. By the way, that Impervium Plating was money in one of his games that we got to see. And Zam with Treacherous, Count Dooku, Thermal Detonators, Rigged Cargo Chute, and Hull Upgrade. Now, Will, when we were commentating a couple of his games, we didn't see him use Treacherous even one time. Did we see it? I remember you kept calling
We caught him in the top 32, so it was early in the morning and hadn't had his coffee fully digested yet. I do think Treacherous is really good. I think people have been continually undervaluing how valuable Treacherous is. It can work when let me read the card first, because it sounds very complicated, but it's, I think, pretty straightforward. Let me pull it up here. Let me find somebody in the Separatist who has it. Tetris. Has a single charge. While you defend, you may choose a ship obstructing the attack and spend one charge. If you do, cancel one hit or crit result, and the ship you choose gains one strain token. And you get the charge back. After a ship at range 0-3 is destroyed, recover one charge. I guess I never thought about that, but you could recover your own charge when you are destroyed. That means nothing, so don't worry about that. But so the instances where I thought he would be triggering Treacherous is things like when one of your ships is blocked in the front. That ship who blocked you should be obstructing all of the other attacks. Another way that I you can really utilize it is against swarms. When swarms line up in that block formation, they will in the back row will end up shooting through the front row, and you can end up straining the enemies as well. I think when it first came out, we always thought like you would have like that wall of vultures protecting you, and they would end up getting the strain. No, treacherous is way better if you're straining the enemy and reducing your damage. Super good.
All right. Nicholas Durand gives us into the top two, five Foresight Inquisitors. And then Sebastian Demers tops it off here, getting the W, winning the event with Spacers and Tracers and a little extra secret sauce. What do we got here, Ryan?
All right, so we have Nom Lom, Proton Torpedo, Zam Wessel, False Transponder Codes. We have our normal common Spacer Tracer, Tractor Beam, two Tractor Beams and two Thread Tracers. And then Sunny Bounder with the Big Bang Advanced Proton Torpedo. That's a lot of dice to attempt to have Sunny Bounder be the one to have that happen for. The odds are really, really low for it, but you know what? Shoot for the moon. Just do it. Go for it. Sunny Bounder likes to lock anyway, so sure, why not? No, I can see through the amount of ships. They're all moving at I-1. You have a big base ship. After Nom Lom shoots off that well-modded proton torpedo, that is going to mean Nom Lom afterwards, range of one shots, not too great. Just got the mobile arc. So Nom Lom becomes a disrupting blocker. And that's prime for Sunny Bounder to pounce in and set up that advanced proton torpedo.
Now, absolutely fantastic. We got the Zam in there doing double attacks and everything. And congratulations to Sebastian getting the W. Now, Marcel, did you notice anything about those top 32? Did you notice anything missing?
Yeah. Well, outside of the resistance.
No, I mean that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Where my resistance at? Do you know how far down I gotta go until I get the first resistance list?
Don't know. Why don't you?
I gotta go all the way down to 40. I gotta go down to 40th place.
Ooh.
Okay. And
I will say that 40th place one. That's the type of resistance archetype I've been eyeballing.
That's right. So
the question is whether it's that type of so to clarify, it is a Jess, Mimi, Bastion, Rose, and V Marotti. Watch out for V Marotti. It is the only intel agent available in all of hyperspace. It is a really good intel agent. But is that type of archetype the one to go, or is it the four T-70s named? People have been looking at Mimi, Jess, Bastion, and Snap. The new HOH snap, utilizing that, you know, if you close your foils, I'll open them and you get to calculate. Great for those Talon rolls in 4Ks. Mm-hmm. But like no proc at A-Wings. Where's Poe and some A's? Where Nobby, did you play?
I don't think Nobby or I played, that's why.
Okay. So I wanted to make sure that we shouted out the resistance here a little bit, because I know we got players who play all the factions. So if you're wondering how the resistance did, we had Andy Priest here in 40th, bringing the list that Ryan just read off: Bastion, Nimi, Jess, Rose, and Vi. And then we go for the next one. We jump down to 48th place, which is Robert right here, Robert S., who brings Poe with backwards tail slide, R4 astromech, ferrosphere paint, overdrive thrusters, and S foils, Neon Nub with Daredevil, R4 astromech, ferrosphere paint, S foils, and black one, and then ZZ with starboard slash, proton rockets, and ferrosphere paint as well. Go ahead, Ryan. I think you're about to say what I'm thinking. Go for it.
Hot take incoming. Don't sleep on the ferrosphere paint. Not when false transponder codes are around.
Bingo.
You take that lock, you're not in my bullseye, you get a stress, buddy.
That's right. I mean, that is what Robert was planning for. So, you know, there is some potential here. I know that, you know, sometimes you get a little down on your faction when you don't see them perform, but see what you can learn. What can you learn from what happened in the tournament? Because, you know, at four wins, those are two resistance lists that had four wins. There's a couple other ones. Andy Cameron, Poe, ZZ, Tally, Merle. Couple of versions of that out there, but that's the other four win list. You know, things go a different way in a game. You could end up with maybe the resistance in the cut. So, you know, resistance, don't sleep on them. There are definitely some tools there. It's just a little different. So, going through all that, what is your thoughts on the overall meta of the Sigma qualifier? Anything that you think we might end up seeing in the future? What's the good? What's the bad? What do you want to see? Evolutions? Go for it, Marcel.
Well, I think it's different than what I want to see, but I think we're going to continue to see, especially as, I don't know about next week, but you know, being that a lot of the people may be just playing for fun, that they've already, you know, it's not their first time playing in a qualifier. But I think once we get into the actual scrum of things in March, we're just going to see a ton of 3 agility, 5 plus ships. So whether it's 3 Inquisitors, 5 Inquisitors, 6 Inquisitors, 6 Inquisitors plus Wampa. Will, we're not forgetting you. A bunch of spacers and tracers. You know, either way you look at it, interceptors. The interceptors are, you know, go figure. 3 attack gun and 3 agility are good in the other factions. So why not in the Empire as well? Or actually, why not in the Empire, not named Inquisitor as well? I'm actually surprised I didn't see any TIE Advanced, because TIE Advanced kind of have the same thing, 5 health with 3 agility, and they just need a couple tracers out there, and now you've got a bunch of TIE Advanced ships with target lock focus, putting crits out there in front of things. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple TIE Advanced lists coming out as well. Again, 3 agility, 5 plus ships is where you're most likely to get the most bang for your buck.
Fantastic.
William, I hear you smile. I see you smiling.
I know what you were doing there. It's so funny.
Will, your closing thoughts on the Sigma qualifier and the future of hyperspace?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be spacers and tracers. Anything with 3 agility has been proved to do very well. I am interested to see what kind of counters people come up for these foresight ships. And though I will shout out one. A list archetype that we kind of just skim over because we've seen it plenty of times, but first order aces, whether you have triple silencer, you throw a Von Raug in there, whatever, it's still a triple ace to me. That is still winning games, even against like spacers and tracers and all these big like beefy Y-wing and arc lists and things like that. So I still think that there's potential. It just I guess it saddens me that we basically only have aces for Republic and First Order. I'm not sorry, Poe. you're getting missed out on that. So I will continue to expect the FO triple aces to do well in the future.
All right, Ryan.
Well, yeah, besides, you know, the obvious, a lot of taps, a lot of seeks, 7B knights. Will mentioned what I was going to say if he didn't say, which is that the prevalence of FO aces being the main first order archetype that we're seeing do well. And now we're coming to see the Republic four ship salad, where it's some combination of 1-2 Adas, 1-2 7B knights, little Torp Annie, and depending on the amount of Adas or 7Bs you've already put in your list, you might incorporate an arc or two, or maybe a lat. Who knows? But there's a lot to work with, a lot. And then a little mix of 5X in there, you know, simple, effective, and people diversifying their usage of XAM, both in Scum as crew and as a pilot in Separatist without magneted to Mr. Django Mango Fett. No more mangoes for Django. Leave him out. Leave him home. Grievous is your friend, and then find things for friends along with XAM and Grievous, and you'll be fine.
All right. So that closes out our discussion for Sigma. Last little bit today. You know it's coming. We talked about it earlier. Darth Vader is in the Defender. It's official. It's canonical. You see it in the book Thrawn Alliances, and it has come to fruition. It is Max Brooks' final parting gift to X-Wing as he was headed out the door at FFG. We've reached out to Max, and he's going to be hanging out with us here in the future. So the Dark Lord of the Sith, you can see that Ryan's hiding. There was a, you know what, I'll bring up the camera. I've been trying to rest my head here a little bit. I'm not feeling great, but I think I need to show my face for this discussion. Okay. Ryan, I want to lead this discussion while talking with you, my friend. How would you feel? Okay, I'm just gonna ask you a series of questions. Okay, so what if I said I had a friend who said something along the lines of, "You know what, Dion? I think Vader will be like 90 points." How would you react to them?
Does he have any upgrade slots at all?
He's got upgrade slots.
Is he epic only?
No.
Oh, bye. I'm out.
So,
Does he have a sensor slot?
Sure.
I'm really out. Bye. leave me be.
So the reason I bring it up this way, you know, when we saw this come up, I think it was Wednesday, right? It was Wednesday Flight Club when it dropped, and you know, everybody's throwing about point numbers, and there's people saying like, "Oh, I've tested X, Y, and Z," and I'm not doubting you or anything like that, but I strongly believe that people are undervaluing Darth Vader and the Defender. Let's go ahead and read the ability, because for our non-visual listeners here, there was a spread of cards revealed on FFG. Was it FFG Germany? Their website. That showed a full spread of the cards. That's likely going to be in probably next week's FFG article is what I would expect, but it got leaked early here. So the ability says, you cannot spend force except while attacking, period. Okay? So let's talk about that part first. That means that you can't spend force even on upgrade cards unless it's while attacking, unless it fits in that while attacking bubble, okay? And then it says, while you perform an attack, you may spend one force to change one blank result to a hit result, and you have three force available to you. You also still have the full throttle ability. After you fully execute a speed 3-5 maneuver, you may perform an evade action. So, Will, I saw people writing on Facebook that Vader's ability is bad. That Vader's ability is trash. I read this quote, that it is trash. Okay? Can you speak some wisdom into the world, please? Can you bring us down to reality?
Well, I mean, that first part is pretty bad. That's a non-ability. That's a negative ability. But the other half, though, that says that you can spend the force to change a blank result, gives him consistency of almost no other ship except for, I guess, Rey, who basically has the same ability.
No, you got Kylo with optics. Essentially what it is, Kylo with
optics. Yeah, Kylo with optics can be blocked. Even if you block this Vader.
Like, if you get Kylo with optics, that's like the... basically, because he's got three force and he can do that. The blank, a focus, and a hit, and so on.
Okay. Well,
the action you need to take. This has the consistency of that
without action
at all.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll put Kylo Optics up there with Rey and this Darth Vader Defender then. But you're getting some of the most consistent offense you can in X-Wing. And because he only can spend his force on offense, burn it up then. Only spend force on offense. So it is going to leave, if you're the full throttle Darth Vader, your focus, or at least your evade that you get for it, for defense there. Now, you do have barrel and boost, so maybe you can arc dodge a little bit as well, so you can get out some shots. But I think the ability is very strong. We'll now, just see how
one thing I want to clarify, the ship works out. I want to clarify really quick because there's questions coming up in the chat. So yes, you can only convert a single blank result using the force, but similar to Rey, you could still use, because you have two other force available, you can use those with their normal usage. You can convert focus actions. So if you get the average dice roll, right, the trail mix, focus, hit, blank, you can get three hits by spending two force. Okay? Vader, if he will very often, similar to when he's in the TIE Advanced, he's gonna be hitting you for three almost every turn. Almost every turn it's happening, three hits. If you're going to play against Defender Vader, expect three hits to be on the table when those dice finish getting modified. Now, let's continue down this path talking about the points, okay? Because I, as a joke, during our Wednesday stream, okay, was like, Vader at 90, 95 sounds ridiculous to me. I went and I wagered 105 or more, okay? I said 105 at minimum. But as a joke, I was like, haha, 95, I doubt it, okay? And there was enough people in the chat on the Wednesday that were like, no, I think it's going to be cheaper than 94, that we made a little wager, okay? If the points for Vader are 95 points or cheaper, I'm going to buy two people in the community. We'll do a roll-off, okay? Their ships, one copy of every expansion for a year, okay? I'll do that for two people if it comes out to 95 or cheaper. But I'm so confident that it's not going to happen. So, leave it at that. Even so much, Jeff Sanders. You see what Jeff Sanders posted on Facebook today? So, this is Jeff Sanders out of Australia. He made a little TTS repaint with the number 95 on the side. He's so excited. All right? Now, people say, what if he doesn't get the sensor slot? All right, you know what? Let's roll there. Marcel, what if he doesn't get the sensor slot?
It's still too good. If he's got the sensor slot, he's at 105. Obviously, that's way too good. If he's at 105 or above, I'm guessing it's going to be like 107 or so. 108. But anyway, with that, it's like at 118, 115, whatever it is. Like that, okay, that's kind of closer to like Anakin that comes in at 126, I believe, if you with Supernatural on Anakin. Supernatural Anakin is 126, which is Vader with advanced sensors is better than Anakin with Supernatural, even because of that extra agility and the free evade during moves that he's not advanced sensoring. So even if he doesn't have advanced sensors, I don't care. Like, I wouldn't be putting advanced sensors on him a lot of the time. Maybe I would. but I wouldn't be using
you
it.
You definitely
then.
Should put advanced sensors on them. Yeah. Are you crazy? Are you crazy? You definitely put advanced sensors on him.
Ryan, go ahead.
You know what
go
happens
ahead.
When you put advanced sensors on him? You don't get shot nearly as much because you can.
I get it. I get
or,
it.
Or, you know what? Opt into a block. I'll take an evade. Opt into a block. I have all my offense anyway because I have force evader ability.
No, I get it. I get it. That was. I would take. I mean, you would if you're spending that many points on a ship. I would, but the point is, even if he doesn't have it, he still needs to be 100 and something just because of the ability. He still has he's got 7 health, 3. He's got 3/4 on offense. Yeah, so what? He's got 3/4, and then on defense, he's got a focus evade almost every single time. Yeah, he's got a white K turn on top of that. Like, let's not forget, this is still a defender. You know, the generic defenders, we saw 2 of them at 70 points. Initiative 1. 2 initiative 1s at 70 points make the cut. That's initiative 1s. With no force or anything. At 70, and you're going to tell me this is not going to be 100 plus?
Yeah. All right, can I do some calculations with you guys?
Sure.
So
pull out the calculator.
All right, so Darth Vader in the X-1, who can spend force on defense, by the way, is 21 more points than Merrick Stell, and I would rate their abilities pretty much on par, right? With
the pilot abilities?
Yeah, Vader getting extra actions, and Merrick Stell putting through basically choosing direct hits. I mean, yeah, I know what you're saying, like on par or whatever, but I mean like in the same caliber of like S or A tier abilities, not compared, like, obviously.
As straight ability versus ability.
Yeah.
Outside of what they're on and what they do. Yeah.
Yes.
If it wasn't who he is being stuck on an advanced one and maybe on something else, he could definitely, that ability could be better. Sure.
I mean, anyways, I was giving them both easy A tier abilities. So, but that's a 21 point difference with essentially the equivalence in abilities. Now, let's compare Rexler Brath, who is 78 points. And in my opinion, Rexler Brath's ability, not A tier. Whatever below that. Maybe C, I don't know. Maybe B. That's not the point. But his ability is not amazing. It's not go home and write about it kind of stuff. And I would put Rexler Brath's ability in the same category as Vader's ability because it has the negative. Okay, just go with me here. I know the using the force on offense is crazy good, but not being able to use the force on defense is a huge, huge detriment to what you can actually do with the force tokens then. So again, we'll add that 21 point difference between Merrick Stowe and I-5 and Darth Vader in the same chassis. That ends up being 99 points, though. And I just don't think that Vader, that difference of 21 points is including Vader, who can spend force on defense. So it just boggles my mind that it would be anything more than 99 points, because I don't see how Vader, like that difference between the I-5 and I-6 with force, I would assume would be less so.
For the sake of my wager, Will, I'd be willing to take a 99.
I personally, if I object. I mean, I'm putting at 98, 99 points. Like, that's where I think it would be, just under 100. 95 is a bit much. Like, now we're going into the bargain price to sell territory, but I think it will be a double digit price point for sure.
Well, it can't be lower than a double digit price point.
Well, I'm opposed to a triple digit price point.
Okay, all right. So the one, I think the one issue is, I see your comparison, but I think the issue becomes, this is a, like Marcel mentioned, this is now a defender at I-6 who has the ability to have evades, which Vader in the TIE Advance does not. So defensively, you're looking at a much better chassis. You're looking at a ship ability base that gives you a free evade action. You're also looking at, because it's at I6, it has repositioning better knowledge as long as it doesn't get blocked. Praise be, we don't get advanced sensors on Vader, basically, because then he'll just be unblockable. It won't matter. And then, on top of that, because you have I6, you have the ability to initiative kill stuff that could threaten a shot back at you, which is arc dodging by jousting, basically. It's the Dale Cromwell method.
If I shoot go, first, just go.
I arc dodged it. It didn't shoot me back. Like, no problem. So that's another layer to add on top of this combined issue. Not only is it a defensive powerhouse as is, just with the chassis ability and the base hull and shield value, it also, now at a higher initiative, has the chance to not only straight destroy what it's shooting at, but because of how consistent Vader's dice is, it's stripping those tokens potentially ships are trying to save for offense to shoot at it. Not even counting the potential fact of what upgrade slots it could have.
All right, Ryan, give me a number. I wrote everybody else's number up here. What's yours?
Epic only. Then I don't care what cost it is. It can be whatever you want.
Epic only. There we go. Well, that, you know, this is, there's a lot of passionate discussion happening out there, with, you know, about this ship. There is plenty in here that we can talk about. You can kind of make up some half abilities out there. We're not going to worry about doing that too much. I'd wait for us to get a preview so we can actually get the full cards. I would expect to see that sometime this week. Especially, I will tell you, they're super aware of this leak because it ended up being taken down within 40 minutes of people finding it. So expect to see it. And if you want to just kind of look through what is here. All right, you can see that there's some cards that we definitely haven't seen yet. There's a some epic cards. You can see those are those commander cards in there, which, you know, to your point, Ryan, you know, you talk about Vader being potentially epic only. Like, this pack clearly has, you know, normal 200 point game cards and epic stuff here. So that would be... It's possible, 100% possible, that we could see epic only.
You know what it also has? A large prevalence of talents. And we did just see in the actual article release, Cutthroat for Scum, I think we are going to see more faction-specific talents in each pack. One for Imperial and one for the Rebel pack as well.
Yep.
They might start filling out these factions that don't have two faction talents like the, I think it's only the First Order has right now.
Yep. I think it's this one right here. This picture with saluting, it'll be Imperial. like loyalists or something like that, you know, some mm-hmm. But we will end up seeing what we get. There was also a spread. Let me see if I can pull it up here really quickly. There was also a spread for the Rebels, but people noticed very quickly that there's some mistakes in that one because they're using we'll go ahead and pull it up here. If you look at the pilots, you see pilots, you see Hera in there, there's some other stuff. But if you look at the upgrades, it's kind of hard to trust it when you see Black 1, backwards tail slide, automated target priority. Like, this looks like the spread from a resistance box, clearly, right?
That's the spread from Heralds of Hope.
Yep. So this doesn't give us any information. So people were excited. Like, they first saw automated target priority at the front. Say, oh my God, are we going to get tech slots for RZ1A wings? I doubt it, because I think that feels like a more of a themey type of upgrade for the sequel trilogy ships. But, you know, there's some stuff here. As we get more information, we will we'll get it. Here's a little preview. We do get to see, if you can squint hard enough, Wedge's ability looks to be different then his
X-wing ability. It's just primary and front arc only.
Yeah, it's the same ability, but only primary front arc.
Thank you. Thank you. No, no brackets or rear arc wedge attacks, please.
Thank you.
There you go. So looking forward to see that. And as we get more information, we'll take a look at them. You know, there's some half abilities here, but it's a little bit difficult to make them out. And when we have more solid info, we'll let you know. But hopefully you enjoyed our discussion today. We'll find out how many points Vader is when we do. When you're watching this later on, if you're watching on YouTube, let us know in the comments, how many points do you think Darth Vader is going to be? If you're listening to this, jump on Discord. Let us know where you think the Vader Defender would be. Let us know on our Discord. And Rebel Maverick 99, aka Jonah, asking for vectored cannons? Question mark. Yeah, that's a great point. So Jonah had pointed out that there are four turrets down here in the spread. Now, can we trust this spread? I don't know. But if there are four turrets indicators in the box, that would tell you that there are likely four vectored cannon upgrades in the box. Is our guess.
Also
it's a standardized upgrade, and they helping with this pack. Any A-wings you already have could take this too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think it's for counting tokens. I think the three force charges as well either means that Ahsoka is only two force and someone else is force sensitive, or she's going to have all three of those force charges. Super excited about that.
Snap. Oh, snap.
Three force A-wing. Oh boy.
Watch out, Ahsoka. Well,
108 points.
I mean, you know what? They did battle each other. We saw that in Star Wars Rebels, right? Maybe. But I don't think the A-wing is quite as good of a chassis as a defender.
But you just hope they're not.
Well, hopefully you guys enjoyed today's show. We'll talk to you later, everybody. Be smart, be safe. And if you're wondering why Dion feels like crap today, before our stream, I got the second dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. I will tell you, I'm feeling better now than I did earlier today, and I'm expected, you know, those side effects are expected. I put a big long post about it on Facebook and Discord, so if you guys want to take a look there, that'd be great. But remember, guys, evade COVID, path back to the table, be smart, be safe. Gold Squadron out.